continent rich in resources and diverse cultures would soon become the battleground for empires hungry for power and wealth. The colonization of the Americas, sparked over 500 years ago, would forever reshape the world as European powers like Spain, Portugal, England, and France set sail across the Atlantic. They encountered vast civilizations, forged alliances, and waged brutal wars. Over the course of centuries, entire societies were transformed, for better or for worse, in the pursuit of land, gold, and glory. But how did it all unfold? To understand the impact that still echoes today, we must start from the beginning. The entire history of the colonization of the Americas. America is clearly divided into three different areas: Northern, Central, and South. The fourth one is the Caribbean Islands, a group of more than 700 islands inhabited by various tribes. The geography of pre-colonial America was also incredibly diverse, with a wide range of climates, landscapes, and ecosystems. There was a frozen tundra in the Arctic Circle, but also a tropical rainforest in the Amazon. The northern part is similar to today: great plains with bison herds surrounded by the Rocky Mountains to the Mississippi River, forests at the east, and deserts in the Midwest. Tropical forests in Central America provided cover from the enemies, and all the way to pampas fertile land in today's Argentina. The Caribbean region also had a warm climate, perfect for agriculture. This diversity offered a variety of habitats for different groups of indigenous peoples to live in. Although America was ultimately discovered by Europeans in the late 15th century, this continent flourished and had its rich history before Columbus. The main problem is that there are not many sources about that. In Central and South America, local tribes developed complex writing systems, similar to Egyptian hieroglyphs. In the northern part of the continent, that was not the case. Because of that, historians had a lot of trouble determining more facts about the pre-colonial history of America. And that also presents the problem of learning about the overall population living in the Americas, especially since there were more than 1,000 different tribes across the continent. Some scholars present the estimated number as high as 100 million people overall. All of them were divided into tribes. Each tribe had its own unique cultures, languages, religions, and traditions. The total estimated population of the Americas before European contact is difficult to determine, but some scholars estimate that it may have been as high as 100 million. Some of the most well-known indigenous groups in pre-colonial America include the Aztecs, Mayans, and Incas in Central and South America, and the Iroquois, Cherokee, Apache, Navajo, and Sioux in North America. The spread and population estimates of these tribes varied greatly depending on their location and environment. In the eastern woodlands of North America, the Iroquois Confederacy was a powerful alliance of five tribes: the Mohawk, Oneida, Onondaga, Cayuga, and Seneca. They were estimated to have around 25,000 people in the 16th century. Further south, the Cherokee tribe inhabited the Appalachian Mountains and were estimated to have a population of around 50,000 people. On the Great Plains, the Sioux tribe was one of the largest and most powerful, estimated to have a population of around 30,000 people. They were nomadic hunters who followed the buffalo herds and lived in teepees. The Comanche tribe, also on the Great Plains, were estimated to have a population of around 20,000 people and were known for their horsemanship and raiding skills. In the Pacific Northwest, the Tlingit tribe was one of the largest and most sophisticated, with around 10,000 people. They were skilled fishermen and traders. These groups developed complex societies with sophisticated and unique political systems, art, and architecture unknown to Europeans. Most of these tribes were organized into clans or family groups. Some tribes had a hierarchical system of chiefs and elders who made decisions for the community as some sort of council. That social hierarchy resembles a lot to the one of Greek polises. Some even practiced a democratic system where everyone could be heard. Tribes in North America relied heavily on hunting and gathering. They moved from time to time, while the ones stationed southern practiced agriculture. That's why they could form larger states, and even empires, like the Incas and Aztecs. Trade networks existed between tribes. Goods such as furs, food, and weapons were being exchanged. The use of currency was not widespread, and bartering was the preferred method of trade. Their downfall was also their technology, which couldn't match the Europeans. They used simple tools for hunting, farming, and construction of homes and other structures. Some tribes developed medical knowledge using herbal remedies for treating illnesses. Native American settlements varied in size. Some settlements were small and temporary, while others were larger and more permanent. The type of housing used by Native Americans also varied depending on the region and climate. For example, in the Southwest, natives built adobe houses, while those in the Great Plains built teepees. One of the first civilizations that we are familiar with is the Mississippian civilization. It was a pre-Columbian culture in North America, from around the 8th to the 16th century. As its name says, it was stationed in and around the Mississippi River Valley and its tributaries, covering an area that includes present-day states such as Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Missouri. They are today mostly known for their large earthen mounds for religious and ceremonial purposes. Some were over 30 meters high. Archaeologists discovered they also grew crops like beans and squash. Mississippian people even developed an irrigation canal system to manage their agricultural production. Since they were divided into various tribes, trade was important in Mississippian society. The decline of this culture had little influence on Europeans, even though they had met the conquistadors. The Spaniards had little luck there and were mostly killed by the natives. The only thing that remained from the Spanish were some artifacts and diseases that affected the natives. When the conquistadors returned a few decades later, there was no Mississippian culture. There is no definite reason for their decline. Possibly it was due to a combination of factors such as environmental changes, disease, and warfare. The other, much older group in North America was the ancestral Puebloans. It is a group of Native American people who lived in the southwest region of the United States from approximately the 2nd to somewhere around the 15th century. Commonly known as the Anasazi, a Navajo word meaning ancient ones or enemy ancestors. The ancestral Puebloans were known for their cliff dwellings built into the sides of cliffs and canyons. These structures were often multi-storied and made of stone, adobe, and wood. The Anasazi also built large open-air structures called kivas, which were used for religious ceremonies since they were very religious. Even today, the descendants of the ancestral Puebloans live in the southwest region of the United States. The situation was somewhat different when we went to the south. There we had much more organized nations, with the most important among them being the Aztecs, Inca, and Maya. The Aztec Empire was an empire that controlled most of today's Mexico, from one ocean to another. It had a complex society with a hierarchical social structure. At the top were the rulers, the nobility, and the priests, followed by the merchants, artisans, and farmers. Slaves were at the bottom of the social ladder. With that structure, it resembled more European medieval kingdoms than the tribes to the north. One more important aspect was religion, which was highly important. The Aztecs practiced human sacrifice, and there is much archaeological evidence of that horrible ritual. The Inca Empire was the largest in pre-Columbian America. It was located in the Andean region of South America, stretching from present-day Colombia to Chile, but mostly in today's Peru. The Inca Empire was ruled by a monarch known as the Sapa Inca. The Sapa Inca was considered a living god and had absolute power over the empire. The empire was divided into four regions, each with its own governor. The governors were responsible for collecting taxes, maintaining order, and carrying out the orders of the Sapa Inca. A complex system of roads helped this administration. One of the most impressive examples of Inca development is Machu Picchu, a city built on a mountain ridge in Peru in the 15th century, and was abandoned shortly after the Spanish conquest. The Maya civilization was quite different than the two mentioned before. Located in parts of Mexico, Belize, Guatemala, and Honduras, it lasted until 1697. It was much more based on science and culture. The Maya developed a complex calendar and a writing system that used symbols. They wrote on bark paper, stone, and pottery. Maya literature included historical records, religious texts, and stories. The most famous Maya text is the Popol Vuh, a creation myth that tells the story of the world's creation and the adventures of the hero twins. In that, Maya civilization resembles Greek city-states, and that's exactly the same how the Maya civilization was divided. That's why the Maya is not known as the empire. And while the pre-colonial history of America is in the shadows, on the eastern coast of the Atlantic Ocean, European society advanced to the point of expanding on other continents. And who would be the first to explore and reach the unknown lands across the large body of water? Of course, the Vikings. Although it seemed almost impossible then, two historical sources state about the travels across the ocean. The first one is Adam of Bremen, who wrote one of the most prominent works in the Middle Ages. The second one is the Saga of Eric the Red. It tells the story of the banishment of Eric the Red from Iceland and how he discovered a new land. He named it Greenland. He chose that name to promote the new land, even though it was, in fact, quite white, cold, and snowy. After some time, Eric's son Leif Erikson had a misfortune traveling from Norway back to Greenland when his ship was blown away to a new and unknown land. The land he named Vinland and some of his men decided to explore further and found some settlements there. There they encountered indigenous people whom they called Skraelings, and soon the hostility started. This is the first mention of Native Americans in European history. Many historians didn't accept this saga as a reliable historical source, but the archaeological excavation in the 1960s in Canada confirmed the story. In the Newfoundland region, in the place called L'Anse aux Meadows, archaeologists discovered a Viking village from the early 11th century, proving that the first visitors from Europe came from Scandinavia, almost half a millennium before Columbus. By the 15th century, the time of Vikings had already passed, and the first who tried to explore beyond the known world were the Portuguese. They wanted to eliminate Muslim traders from the trade with the Orient. One group of Portuguese explorers went around Africa to India, and the other went to the west. The mastermind behind this exploration was Prince Henry the Navigator. The goal of this exploration was the spreading of Christianity and amassing wealth. The neighboring Spain became unified in 1469, and with a series of successful marriages, the most powerful nation in Europe. One man from Genoa, Christopher Columbus, decided to take his chances and asked for sponsorship from the Spanish Queen Isabella to reach India. Under the assumption that the earth is round, he decided to sail westward to reach the east. He didn't know about the continent in between. Three ships sailed from Palos and, after a very problematic journey, reached the new continent on October the 12th, 1492. Columbus discovered an island in the Bahamas and named it San Salvador, emphasizing how that land saved his crew. Columbus continued his journey, exploring the Caribbean and Central and South America, and made three more voyages to the Americas throughout his life. On these journeys, he discovered Hispaniola, where he founded the first colonies called La Navidad and La Isabela, Cuba, Jamaica, Trinidad, and other Caribbean islands. Till the end of his life, Columbus claimed that he reached India. On his voyages, Columbus met indigenous people whom he enslaved and mistreated. They were not immune to European diseases, which decimated their numbers. Therefore, Columbus started the Spanish colonization and race in controlling territories in the New World. Also, he started slavery in the Americas, The new continent got its first explorers, and among them, the most notable, Amerigo Vespucci. He became so famous that the whole continent got its name after him. During his four voyages to America, Vespucci described the new continent to the Europeans. The only problem with the exploration and colonization race is that it could easily lead to armed conflicts, and the first threats between the ruling houses of Portugal and Spain were already sent. To prevent the war between them, both countries decided to divide the unexplored world. The Treaty of Tordesillas became the foundation of colonialism. It is an agreement signed on June 7, 1494, that split the recently discovered world into two zones. The west part belonged to Spain and the east to Portugal. This division left Africa to Portugal and the Americas to Spain, except for today's Brazil, which belonged to Portugal but has not yet been discovered. Portuguese explorers led by Cabral accidentally discovered Brazil in 1500, but some in Spain talked about it as a fraud. They thought that the Portuguese knew about that land and kept it quiet from Spain. There were no formal complaints. After the treaty, both sides continued their exploration. The main difference is that Portugal founded trading posts, and Spain mostly mining colonies. Ever since Columbus set foot on the American continent, Spanish explorers and conquistadors traveled across the Atlantic Ocean in search of new lands, resources, and converts to Christianity. Some of them had noble causes like Bartolomé de las Casas, but most just wanted to get quick wealth. Over several decades, they established a vast empire that spanned through Central and South America, the Caribbean, and some parts of North America. Such a quick victory over American nations is explained by Spanish technological advancements. Native people didn't stand a chance against the conquistadors, who had gunpowder weapons. The two most well-known examples are the falls of the Aztec Empire and the Inca Empire. Hernán Cortés was a Spanish conquistador who didn't have a noble ancestry and did not have much chance of succeeding in Spain. His main goal was to become rich. Drawn to wealth and adventure in the New World, Cortés sailed to Hispaniola in 1504. There he became a soldier and a lower-level administrator. Soon he gained experience in the conquest of Cuba. In late 1518, Cortés was ordered to lead his men to explore and secure the mainland of today's Mexico. Next year, he led a small numbered expedition from Cuba to Mexico. There, he encountered the Aztec Empire, a state that controlled much of central that area. Aztec Empire ruled over a large number of vassal states and tribes, with some of whom Cortés allied. Also, many Aztecs considered the Spaniards as divine providence in human form. Cortés and his small army of soldiers were initially welcomed by the Aztecs. However, tensions quickly rose as the Spanish began to demand tribute and convert the Aztecs to Christianity. Cortés used this initial friendship to gain access to Aztec ruler Montezuma II and held him hostage. Despite being outnumbered, Cortés was able to defeat the Aztecs through a combination of military tactics and cunning. The Aztec defense was further weakened by the smallpox epidemic brought by the Spanish. Cortés established Mexico City on the ruins of the Aztec capital, Tenochtitlan, and began the process of Spanish colonization on the mainland. And on his footsteps, the other followed, among them Francisco Pizarro. Francisco Pizarro shared a similar modest background with Cortés. He was an illegitimate child of an infantry colonel and a peasant woman. Pizarro joined the Spanish army and moved to the New World in 1502. There, Pizarro participated in various expeditions and conquests, gaining experience and wealth. He even had a small part in the discovery of the Pacific Ocean. One thing Pizarro had was ambition. His goal was to conquer the Inca Empire, which had a large territory. The Inca were ruled by Emperor Atahualpa at the time, but the empire was in a state of turmoil due to a recent civil war. This internal conflict weakened their defenses. Pizarro invited the Inca ruler to a meeting and ambushed his troops in November 1532 in Cajamarca. Despite the Inca paid vast amounts of gold and silver, Pizarro executed Atahualpa in 1533. At that moment, the war was effectively over, although the last bastions fought until 1572. Smallpox and the lack of immunity among the natives played its part again. Pizarro established the city of Lima, which became the capital of the Spanish colony of Peru. Pretty soon, Spain created a huge empire in America. And the newly founded empire needed administration to avoid collapsing. Also, with effective organization, it was much easier to take much more gold. The Spanish colonial administration was highly organized, with a clear hierarchy of officials and a defined set of laws and regulations. At the top, there were viceroys, who were appointed directly by the King of Spain and were responsible for everything happening in the colonies. They had a lot of assistants and departments for various areas such as finance, justice, and defense. The local administration was headed by governors, who were appointed by the viceroys. They were responsible for maintaining law and order, collecting taxes, and overseeing the economic development of the colonies. One more thing was a strict system of racial hierarchy. The highest positions in the administration were reserved for Spaniards, while people of mixed race or indigenous people were excluded from the higher echelons of power. The most important role of the administration was to keep the labor system working, and there were problems. The natives were massacred by the diseases, and the Spanish Empire was lacking in the workforce. Therefore, in 1500, the third royal governor, Fray Nicola de Ovando, introduced a new system of free forced labor called the encomienda system. Under the encomienda system, the indigenous people were obligated to provide free labor to Spanish colonizers in exchange for protection and religious instruction. This system didn't differ much from feudalism. Only that in feudalism there were limits to using other people and laws. In the Spanish Empire, there were not many regulations and boundaries for using and abusing the natives. The indigenous people were forced to work in mines, fields, and other industries for long hours. This system resulted in illness, injury, and death. That led to the dwindling number of natives, and the colonizers started to import slaves from Africa. Between 2 and 4 million Africans crossed the Atlantic and ended up as slaves to the Spanish Empire in America. This didn't put an end to the encomienda system, which remained in place until 1791, although in many places, it was unofficially abolished earlier. Some colonists opposed this treatment of natives. Among them, the most well-known is Bartolomé de las Casas. He was the colonizer from Seville who arrived in America in 1502. There, he took part in conquering Cuba and was granted the encomienda. He saw with his eyes what it did to the natives. The harsh treatment changed de las Casas. Soon, he renounced the encomienda, became a priest, and started advocating against the harsh treatment of natives. His works influenced many in their treatment of indigenous people. Sadly, they were a vast minority. With a series of quick conquests, Spain took control over an unimaginable territory across the Atlantic. That territory gave gold, silver, manpower, and agricultural species to Spain, making it the strongest colonial power in the world. But the Treaty of Tordesillas was just an unimportant piece of paper for some other European powers who decided to ignore it. The only problems for them were the tensions on the old continent at home to fully enter the colonization race. Unlike Spain and Portugal, France was involved in many exhausting wars at the beginning of the 16th century. This prevented it from pursuing a naval exploration policy. With the situation at home in mind, France tried to send an expedition across the Atlantic to claim the new land in the name of the French king. The most peculiar story among those early navigators and explorers involves Thomas Aubert. He was one of the first French explorers of the New World. In 1508, Aubert and his men managed to capture 7 natives of the Micmac tribe and take them to France. The sight of these people in Europe awakened the interest in America among the French. Aubert described America as rich in fur and fish, and the French king, Francis I, started sending more navigators there. Italian Giovanni de Verrazzano explored the territory of what is now New York and claimed it in the French name, but that didn't last long. After the loss in the Battle of Pavia in 1525, French King Francis I was taken as a prisoner by his arch-nemesis, Charles V Habsburg. That loss deeply shook France and ended further explorations for almost a decade. After the consolidation and safe return of the king, France continued investing in exploration. The most important French early explorer of America was Jacques Cartier. Jacques Cartier rose from humble beginnings by marrying into an aristocratic family. By that time, he was already an established mariner. During the year 1534, Cartier sailed to the west and reached America. Soon, he became the first to reach the Gulf of St. Lawrence and Prince Edward Island. Cartier established trading relations with the Iroquois tribe and left some of his men to establish colonies, without much success. The most well-known colony, Charlesbourg Royal, lasted only 2 years and was abandoned in 1543. Nevertheless, he still remains the most important French explorer of the 16th century. Although he was sure he was in Asia, similar to Columbus, the full establishment of New France had to wait for Samuel de Champlain. Samuel de Champlain had a promising career even before setting sail for North America. He was born into a family of mariners, but first gained recognition as a soldier during the religious wars in France. After that, he once again turned to sea as a part of the expedition to Mexico. When Champlain returned to France, King Henry IV appointed him as a royal geographer and sent him on his most famous voyage. Champlain established French colonies in North America, but also fur trade and alliances with Native American tribes like Huron and Algonquin. This trade became a major source of income for the colony and helped to establish French dominance in the region. The most important French colony in the north was Quebec, founded in 1608 by Champlain. Quebec soon became the capital of New France. Its strategic location allowed Quebec to become the center of the region and also the main center of the fur trade. That friendly relationship with the natives allowed the first settlers to survive the harsh climate and the lack of resources. The local Native American tribes provided the settlers with food and other necessities. By 1660, the population of Quebec had reached around 3,000. It was a real mixture of French and Native American culture. Soon, the French also established a presence in the Great Lakes region and along the Mississippi River. Quebec continued to grow and thrive. The population increased as more settlers arrived from France, and the settlement expanded to include new buildings, such as a hospital and a church. The fur trade was the backbone of New France's economy. The French established trading posts throughout the region, where they exchanged European goods such as knives, guns, and cloth for furs, particularly beaver pelts needed for hats. The fur trade had signified the great difference in the way of life of the Native American tribes of New France. The trade brought new goods and technologies to the tribes, which improved their quality of life. However, it also had negative consequences. The demand for furs led to overhunting, so the tribes soon became dependent on the fur trade for their livelihoods. That gave the French a large advantage to blackmail the tribes for necessities. On the southern coast of North America, the French colonization went in a different direction. In the late 17th century, French explorer and trader Sieur de La Salle led several expeditions to explore the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico. Sieur de La Salle was from a wealthy family and was a member of the Jesuit order. Soon, he discovered that he preferred an adventurous life and sailed to New France to visit his brother in 1667. 2 years later, he left Montreal and decided to go south to reach the Gulf of Mexico. This expedition didn't bring any success, but got him experience. In 1682, La Salle's voyage resulted in the claiming of the Mississippi River and the surrounding land for France, which he named Louisiana in honor of King Louis XIV. In 1699, French colonizers established the first permanent French settlement in Louisiana at Fort Maurepas, today known as Ocean Springs in Mississippi. Over the next few decades, the French established several other settlements, the most important being New Orleans in 1718, which became the capital of the French colony. Unlike in the North, the French had a mixed relationship with the Native American tribes in Louisiana. While some tribes, such as the Choctaw and Natchez, initially welcomed the French and formed alliances with them, others, such as the Chickasaw, resisted French colonization. If the French traded with a particular tribe, the relationship was friendly. But if French colonists needed land for agriculture, the war was at the Doute. Soon, French colonists organized an administrative system where the governor of Louisiana was the highest-ranking official in the colony. When Native American numbers started to deteriorate, French colonists imported slaves from Africa in the early 18th century. They needed slaves to work on plantations and in the city of New Orleans. Also, French Louisiana was probably the first colony with a large number of interracial marriages between the natives and the colonists. Creoles were people of mixed race and ethnicity, often born to French or Spanish fathers and African or Native American mothers. The English weren't pleased either when the newly explored world was divided and they didn't take their part. After the Civil Wars of the Roses from 1455 until 1485, Henry VII took the throne and he wanted to consolidate the nation, recovering from 3 decades of internal conflict. So he led peaceful politics throughout his reign. King Henry couldn't interfere in the exploration of the New World in the beginning, but the Tordesillas Treaty offended him, so he helped Italian explorer Giovanni Caboto arrange an expedition to the west under the English flag. Giovanni Caboto remained familiar in history as John Cabot was the first European since the Vikings to set foot on North American soil during his second voyage in 1497. Cabot, with only one ship, managed to reach the territory of Newfoundland in Canada. After that success, Henry VII awarded Cabot with money, so he went on his final journey in the following year. There are no records about what happened with the 5 ships that Cabot led, and historians still argue about the fate of the expedition. The letter from King Henry to John Cabot explains the English politics to the colonies. Cabot financed the expedition himself, or with the help of sponsors, and he would be the ruling authority in the newly found settlements, as a vassal of the English crown. All the trading with that future colony would go through Bristol Harbor, and the king would get 20% of the goods. With that in mind, we can understand the future differences between English colonies across North America. After Cabot, other explorers traveled from Bristol to America and went to southern Newfoundland, even Chesapeake Bay in 1508. That expedition was led by Sebastian Cabot, son of John, who followed the steps of his father. Upon his return, Sebastian found out about King Henry's death. Henry VIII was different. He caught up in a religious struggle against the Pope, which brought Reformation in England, so he didn't show any interest in funding explorations. Some historians say that this pause in interference in colonial expansion led to English victory because it would be much harder to establish colonies and develop the colonial empire at a time when the Spanish fleet was much more powerful. Also, in the time of Henry VIII, Spain controlled a significant part of Europe and was the wealthiest country in the continent. While the Spanish grasp over Europe slowly weakened during the next few decades, England couldn't escape the religious turmoil even after Henry's death and almost fell under Spanish rule. When the new queen, Mary, conveniently called Bloody because she prosecuted reformists, married Spanish King Philip II, England was ready to come back to Catholicism. But that wasn't everything, because their future son would rule both Spain and England, among many other territories. This was probably the closest that we ever were to the unification of Western Europe ever since Charlemagne. Mary passed away in 1558. And her sister, Queen Elizabeth I, took over the crown, so Spain became the enemy. That's when England seriously entered a colonial expansionism race. The first English attempt at a permanent settlement didn't last long, but became famous as the first American mystery. The colony called Roanoke was established in 1584 in today's North Carolina. Sir Walter Raleigh, without much trouble, got a royal charter from Queen Elizabeth I. Very soon, the colonists met the natives and even established trading and friendly relations. This successful expedition brought enthusiasm among the English, who wanted to continue the expansion of their colony. Even the Queen herself shared the people's belief and named the new territory Virginia. After the second expedition, the explorer Ralph Lane was put in charge of the colony, and that decision sealed the colony's fate. He single-handedly deteriorated the relationship with the natives to the point of total war between them. The fourth expedition brought some joy when the first English baby was born on American soil, but it was not enough. The painter John White, who was the grandfather of the baby, named Virginia Dare, went back to England with most of the men to get more supplies, but the moment was very bad. England was facing an enormous threat from the Spanish Armada, and all the vessels were confiscated to protect from the future attack, White's ship included. He couldn't return to America for 3 years and went back to Roanoke on the 18th of August 1590, on his granddaughter's third birthday, but he found no one. The colony, now surrounded by a palisade, was abandoned with only the word Croatoan carved on the wall of one of the houses. White was sure that they just moved to the island of that name, but never found his loved ones again. The famous explorer, Captain John Smith, who was taken prisoner by the natives years later, heard the story about the white people among the natives, but this story couldn't be proven. There were also stories about the Spanish attack, but no records. Probably massacred in the war against the Native Americans, some 115 colonists and their fate remains mystery to this day. This failure probably saved the English chances of establishing colonies. However, that sounded odd. Since the Spanish fleet was much stronger on the American continent, English colonists were lucky enough to remain unnoticed, and therefore, there was no Spanish reaction that would probably include a chain of colonies across the coast of Virginia. There were no new plans for colonization for the rest of Elizabeth's reign. But when James Stuart became the king, England decided to use the great geographical position for exploring, so the English colonization of North America took full swing. In 1606, King James I decided to grant a charter to two companies from London and Plymouth to set sail to America to spread Christianity, under the English flag, of course. He needed the pretext of spreading the religion in trying to avoid a reaction from Spain. Lucky for him, Spain wasn't the same superpower as it was a couple of decades before. The London Company founded the first English settlement on May the 14th, 1607. The settlement called James Fort was founded by 104 men who crossed the Atlantic with three ships. Today, this colony is known as Jamestown. Life in Jamestown was very hard. Most of the colonists perished during the first 2 years because of starvation. The main problem was the people who were part of the group. Most of them were adventurists who wanted to get rich, and the colony needed farmers. All that, combined with the lack of fresh water and complicated relations with the natives, led to decline, and in the moments of despair, colonists even turned to cannibalism. The huge fire in 1608 further reduced the chance of the colony's survival, and only the occasional supply ships helped the colony make it in the first couple of years. The colony was even abandoned for a brief time, But the turning point was the appointment of Captain John Smith, who became the head of the colony. John Smith was an adventurist and explorer. He fought as a French mercenary in the Dutch army against Spain and even against the Ottomans and Crimean Tatars. He was a great soldier, but also great in management. Smith established harsh rules in trading with the Powhatan tribe, which led to Jamestown's prosperity. Of course, Smith is mostly remembered from the story about Pocahontas. Pocahontas saved his life when Smith was captured by her tribe in the early days of the colony. Smith left Jamestown after he was wounded in a gunpowder incident, and Pocahontas later married John Rolfe, a tobacco plantage owner, turned to Christianity, and took the name Rebecca. John Rolfe also noted the first arrival of 20 African slaves in Virginia. The tobacco industry decided the course of development of Virginia in the future. While the Virginia colony flourished, the Puritans who left England for the Netherlands during the religious turmoil decided to settle a little more in the north. Although they had permission to settle in Virginia, Puritans didn't want to do that because of their religious differences. They settled in the place they called New England. There were vast differences between the Virginia and Plymouth colonies because the Pilgrims established their rule. 41 people from 104 on the ship signed the Mayflower Compact that regulated the society. The Pilgrims established good relationships with the natives and even had a feast where they were at the table together. This was the first Thanksgiving Day. And even though they were much better prepared than the Jamestown colonists, half of the Pilgrims didn't survive the first winter. After new colonists arrived, the colony expanded with the formation of new cities and expanded rapidly. Soon, Boston became the most developed city in the colony. With the success of establishing these two colonies, many adventurists followed in the footsteps of these pioneers. When the English established their dominant presence, there were 13 colonies, all different in their society, administration, and laws. There were even some tensions between some of them, but there was always one thing in common. Each colony had its own system of local government, elected officials, and representatives. The colonial assemblies were responsible for making laws and regulations for their colonies. However, the ultimate authority was the British Crown, which had the power to veto any laws made by the colonial assemblies. The colonists felt loyalty to the English Crown and considered themselves English. The colonies were established as a source of raw materials and a market for finished goods for the British Empire. This system of trade, known as mercantilism, was designed to benefit the mother country by ensuring a steady supply of resources and a market for British goods. The social hierarchy of the 13 colonies was based on wealth and property ownership. The wealthy plantation owners held the most power and influence in society. The labor system in the colonies was primarily based on agriculture, with the majority of the population working on farms or plantations. Life wasn't easy for those who took their chances in colonies, but it was the hardest for slaves. Slavery was an important part of the labor force in the southern colonies, in need of a workforce for plantations. New Hampshire was founded in 1623 by Captain John Mason as a part of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. It was one of the first English settlements in America, established as a fishing village, and it was absorbed by the Massachusetts Bay Colony after Mason's death. In 1679, King Charles II established New Hampshire as a royal colony to gain more influence over this overseas territory. Maryland was established in 1634 by Lord Baltimore as a refuge for English Catholics facing persecution in England. It was named after Queen Henrietta Maria, the wife of King Charles I, who granted the charter to Lord Baltimore. Connecticut was founded in 1636 by Thomas Hooker. The colony was established as a place for Puritan settlers who were unhappy with the governance of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. The colony was known for its democratic governance. Rhode Island was established in 1636 by Roger Williams, who was banished from Massachusetts. He established the Providence Colony on Rhode Island as a safe haven for all religious dissidents and promised separation of government and church. Soon, others followed, and other colonies like Newport. All the settlements on Rhode Island unified in 1644 on the principle of religious tolerance. Delaware was a colony populated and owned by the Swedish, but later conquered and served as a trading post for the Dutch West India Company. The colony was later taken over by the English in 1682, handed to William Penn as part of Pennsylvania, but with some autonomy. North Carolina was founded in 1653 by Virginians who were seeking new land to settle. Although the Spanish settled first, their colonies were abandoned before the English's arrival. The colony was established as a place for small farmers, and it was known for its tobacco cultivation. South Carolina was established in 1663 when a group of English settlers founded the city of Charleston. The colony was established as a place for growing crops such as rice and indigo. The colony was known for its slave labor on plantations. New York and New Jersey were conquered in 1664 by the Dutch. The colonies were established as trading posts, and it was named after the Duke of York. Pennsylvania was founded in 1682 by William Penn. He was a Quaker who received land from King Charles II as a payback for a debt owed to Penn's father. Penn envisioned Pennsylvania as a place of religious tolerance and democratic principles. Philadelphia was the capital of the colony. Philadelphia quickly grew into a major port and commercial center due to its location along the Delaware River. It was a colony that relied on agriculture and industry. Georgia was the youngest of colonies, founded in 1732 by James Oglethorpe. His goal was to represent a philanthropic colony where good people who had had no luck in life would live. Oglethorpe, as a rich man, bought up many people who had been in prison for debt and brought them as free landowners to his colony. Georgia was a colony of smallholdings and people of all nationalities. Slavery was forbidden, as were alcoholic beverages. Oglethorpe personally ran a new colony that was also the first fort in the South to protect British lands from Indians and Spaniards. This utopian story could not succeed because Georgia was geographically similar to South Carolina and much more suited to large plantations, while the colonists, on the other hand, were smuggling slaves. Oglethorpe left his colony in 1752 disappointed and disgusted by human nature. The interactions between the indigenous peoples and the colonists were marked by both trade and conflict, but mostly conflict. Unlike the French, British colonies were mainly based on agriculture, so it was a must to take as much land as possible, naturally from the natives. The colonists frequently used force to take over native lands, and this led to further conflicts between the two groups. The settlement patterns of the colonists also had a significant impact on the indigenous peoples. The colonists often established settlements on or near native lands, which led to further tensions and conflicts. Sometimes, the colonists tried to establish trade relationships with the native peoples for goods such as furs, food, and other resources. However, these trade relationships were combined with tension and conflict, as both sides wanted to gain the upper hand. One of the most well-known episodes that perfectly represents this relationship was the Tuscarora War, fought between 1711 and 1715. It was a conflict between European settlers and the Tuscarora tribe. The Tuscarora were a Native American tribe who lived in the coastal part of North Carolina. They were part of the Iroquoian tribes. English settlers pressured the Tuscarora for more land and resources. The Tuscarora felt threatened, especially because some Tuscarora were captured and sold into slavery. The natives decided to fight back. In September 1711, the Tuscarora launched attacks on several smaller English settlements. They attacked farms, plantations, and isolated settlements, killing settlers and taking captives. That provoked widespread fear and panic among the settlers. Neighboring tribes joined the attack. The colonists retaliated against the Tuscarora and their allies with enormous brutality, which included crop destruction. That severely weakened the Tuscarora, who faced starvation. The tribe surrendered, and many went north to seek refuge with the Iroquois Confederacy in New York. The Tuscarora assimilated into neighboring tribes, and the colonists took their land, which was the outcome of almost every war between the English and the Native Americans. Besides England, France, Spain, and Portugal, two other European powers tried to establish a colonial presence in America. For a short time, they managed to find colonies but were later wiped out by the stronger colonial powers. Oddly enough, they managed to wage colonial war against each other. Trying to recreate their Viking ancestors' voyage, in 1638, the Swedes established their first settlement in the New World. Fort Christina was founded near today's Wilmington in Delaware. It was named after the Swedish Queen. Fort Christina wasn't the only colony established by the Swedish South Company. This company, created by the Swedish government in 1626, tried to establish trade with the New World. The other settlements, including New Sweden and New Stockholm, were in today's Delaware, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. The main problem for Swedish colonists was conflicts with the Dutch and English. Also, the administration and governing in the colonies were not on a formidable level. Despite these challenges, the Swedes continued to expand their colony and even maintained friendly relations with the natives. Allied with them, they even fought against the English and the Dutch. This Sweden in America came to an end in 1655 when the Dutch captured New Sweden. The other was, of course, the Netherlands. The Dutch quickly established a profitable fur trade with the Native Americans and began to expand their settlements. The most prominent figure of Dutch colonization was an Englishman named Henry Hudson. In 1609, he sailed into what is now New York. Hudson was searching for a northwest passage to Asia, but instead, he found a river that would later bear his name. He explored the river and the surrounding area, making contact with the local Native American tribes. The Dutch East India Company saw the potential for trade in the area and established a colony at the southern end of the river in 1624 in today's Manhattan. Also, in the year before, the Dutch established Fort Nassau on the Delaware River as a center for fur trade with the local Native American tribes. This was the beginning of Dutch colonization in the area that is now New Jersey. The Dutch also established trading posts along the Connecticut River and in what is now Maine. The most important colony from today's point of view was on Manhattan Island. The colony grew quickly, and the Dutch established trade relations with the local Native American tribes, as well as with the English colonies to the north. In 1626, the Dutch West India Company established New Amsterdam on the southern tip of Manhattan Island. This settlement served as the capital of the Dutch colony of New Netherland, which included parts of present-day New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Delaware. The colony's primary economic activities were fur trading and agriculture. The Dutch also established several other settlements in today's Albany and Brooklyn. With decentralized government and large autonomy, these colonies grew and progressed. However, the main problem for the Dutch was the lack of manpower in their colonies. They struggled to attract new settlers and faced competition from the English expanding their colonies in the region. Unlike England, the Netherlands wasn't overpopulated, and it was very difficult to find adventurers and people who lived in harsh conditions a home. That led to slower development of their colonies. Also, the Dutch had a reputation for being less tolerant of religious diversity than the English, which made it less attractive to settlers seeking religious freedom. And almost all the settlers wanted religious freedom. Also, the economy and fur trading there required maintaining peaceful relations with the native tribes as possible allies against the other European colonists. And they did that with the Lenape tribe. In 1655, the Netherlands in America wiped out the Swedish colonies. Native American tribes were the ones likely threatened by the colonists. Constantly losing wars against technologically more advanced civilizations. So that is why they decided to form alliances to protect themselves from European colonizers. The most well-known of these tribal alliances was the Iroquois Confederacy, made up in the Northeast. This confederacy remained a powerful force until the American Revolution. Colonists feared the Iroquoisi, and the coalition also used diplomacy to rival European powers against each other. Other confederacies tried to save their land and even fought formal wars against colonies, using other colonies. The political landscape from Europe just transferred to America, and the natives tried to adapt as best as they could. But the problem was that Europeans had much more experience in diplomacy and easily turned tribes against each other. One of these wars was the Pequot War in 1636 in New England. The Pequot tribe had allied with the Dutch colonists, but when the English arrived in the area, they formed an alliance with the Mohegan tribe and declared war on the Pequots. Since the Pequots controlled the fur trade in the area, English settlers promised the Mohegan their share after the victory. The war ended with the massacre of over 500 Pequot men, women, and children, and by 1638, the Pequot tribe ceased to exist. Another example of wars between the tribes at the time when they were losing their territory to Europeans was the territorial dispute over the Great Lakes region. These so-called Beaver Wars lasted throughout the mid-17th century, and it was fought between the Iroquois Confederacy against the Huron, Erie, and other tribes for control of the fur trade in the area. The Iroquois were ultimately successful, and many of the defeated tribes were either destroyed or forced to move west. That way, more land became free for the Europeans. Sometimes colonists attacked the natives even though they made alliances. The most well-known was the so-called King Philip's War, which lasted from 1675. The war was fought between the Native American tribes of New England and the English colonists. One of the leaders of the Native Alliance, Metacomet, the leader of the Wampanoag tribe, took the name King Philip and named the war. It's the same problem of land ownership that led to coordinated and ferocious attacks on various tribes. The Native Americans were initially successful, but the tide turned when the colonists received reinforcements from other colonies. King Philip didn't survive the war, and most of the tribes were forced to relocate to the west, or worse. But the main enemies of settlers were the colonists from other nations in Europe, and many wars from the homeland just transferred to America and changed the political landscape in the colonies. The first to perish from America were the Swedish, who lost against the Dutch. The next in line were the Dutch themselves. The enemy was none other than the mightiest navy in the world, which looked to use it to gain trade advantage, England. The First Anglo-Dutch War was sparked by the Navigational Act of 1651, which the British Parliament passed to prevent other nations' ships from carrying cargo from British colonies to Great Britain. It was mainly directed against the Netherlands. Also, the disputes over trade and fishing rights in the North Sea influenced the start of the war. The English Navy, commanded by Admiral Robert Blake, won several key battles, but failed to secure a decisive victory. The war ended with the signing of the Treaty of Westminster, which established a temporary truce between the two nations. So the next war was just a matter of time. The Second Anglo-Dutch War was fought over control of trade routes and colonial territories in Africa and the Americas. The English Navy, under the command of Admiral George Monk, won several early victories but was defeated by the Dutch Navy, led by Admiral Michiel de Ruyter. However, Dutch settlers were no match for English colonists who took control over New Amsterdam in 1664. This Second Anglo-Dutch War waged in Europe effectively ended Dutch colonial aspirations in North America. in exchange for the Suriname island. The Netherlands gave up all the colonies by signing the Treaty of Breda in 1667. The Third War didn't affect America as much as Africa and Asia, and after that, the lasting peace was established, and soon Great Britain and Netherlands became allied against France. And wars between two major colonial powers started soon enough. This war transferred from Europe, where the French King Louis XIV tried to conquer neighboring lands and form a huge empire. These countries formed the League of Augsburg, supported by the British, in 1688. Louis XIV started a war against the Augsburg League, which included Emperor Leopold and King William of England. That war was the beginning of France's withdrawal as a hegemon in Europe and one of the first wars to spread to America. The hostility in the colonies began in 1689, and the fighting took place around the territory of the neutral zone of Hudson Bay between New England and New France, to which both countries wanted to expand their colonies during 1684. In 1685, the English made an alliance with the Iroquois Confederation, which needed protection from the French. The Iroquois played an important role as auxiliary units of the English army. From this war began the custom of fighting in these colonial wars, the French and their native allies against the English and their native allies. To start the war, the Schenectady Massacre was a French response to the constant Iroquois raids in today's Canada. Three separate French attacks on isolated settlements in the New York colony claimed over 100 lives and doubled the number of prisoners. The atrocities committed by the French against the English civilians brought the necessary will for war among the English soldiers and colonists who supported them. King William's War was fought along the Mississippi and in Latin America, but as for American warfare, the center of the action was on the border with what is today Canada. In retaliation, the English managed to take Port Royal, one of the most important cities under French rule, but the city later returned to French rule. This war did not change the balance of power in America and was the prelude to a series of wars in the colonies. The 1697 peace in Ryswick defined the status quo, and soon the preparations began for the next war. The French began building a series of fortifications to protect themselves from the more numerous English population. About the English colonies, the problem of the lack of interest of other colonies in the problems of New England came to light. Pennsylvania and Virginia preferred to solve their own problems and didn't care about other colonies. No one had time to recover, and the next war was just around the corner. Queen Anne's War also started in Europe. The last Spanish Habsburg, Carlos II, died without an heir and left the crown to Louis XIV's grandson, Philip of Anjou. Although Louis claimed that Philip would not be the ruler of France, but only of Spain, the war broke out in 1702. Armed clashes quickly spread to the American continent, with skirmishes starting between English colonists who launched an attack on Spanish colonies. England was not prepared for this war in the colonies and suffered defeat after the French invasion of Maine. The eastern colonies on the coast did not care much for the war waged by the western colonies and often continued to trade with the Spanish and the French. After the massacres carried out with the help of the natives, Great Britain gained the advantage of conquering French lands, while Quebec once again remained out of reach. Peace in Utrecht in 1713 ended the war in Europe and also in the colonies. British colonial rule extended to the French Acadia, the southern part of Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, while France gave up its rights to Newfoundland and the Iroquois. French Acadians were given unexpectedly great rights by this peace and were allowed to remain Catholic, which is why Catholic priests often crossed from today's Canada to spy on English. Both sides were exhausted and therefore more than happy to remain in peace while they consolidate. Britain maintained trading and wanted to remove the Spaniards from their part of the profit. Also, the politics in Europe never rests, and the opportunity for that soon presented. Europe entered a new war in 1740. This time, the war was sparked by fighting between Prussia and Austria. But there were no more European wars that did not include all major powers in military, economic, or political terms. Britain was already at war with Spain before the start of the Austrian Heritage War. Under the provisions of the previous peace, Great Britain was allowed to transport a limited number of slaves from Africa to the Spanish colonies and established the South Sea Company for that purpose. In addition to this legal trade, many British traders were involved in smuggling contraband into Spanish colonies, which the Spanish colonial authorities often punished with harsh methods. One of these ship owners, named Jenkins, showed up at a parliament session and showed what he claimed was his severed ear, which he lost because of the harsh punishments of the Spaniards. The Spaniards were in no mood for war, and neither was the British Prime Minister. But the pressure from the public and ship owners led by the South Sea Company demanded full compensation for the damage they had caused. The Spanish refused, and the war for Jenkins' ear began in 1739. The song that was supposed to convey the morale of Britain's victorious army, "God Save the King," was first sung in this war after it was written in 1742. The war for Jenkins' ear was fought in Latin America and did not produce any decisive victory or defeat, which is why in 1744 it became a part of the War of King George, named after the British monarch George II. This war, however, was part of the Austrian Heritage War. After their surrender in Utrecht in 1713, the French systematically prepared for a rematch and built a series of fortifications to protect the entrance to New France and the road by the Mississippi River. By 1720, the Louisbourg Fortress at Lake Michigan had been completed, while the British were less prepared for the war. The only new fort was Oswego in Ontario. Back in 1742, the French signed a treaty with the Spaniards on mutual assistance in America, with the main goal for the Spaniards being to conquer Georgia, to which they felt they had a right. The French wanted their former territories back. As a rule, the war was fought mostly by Native American allies on both sides, with a major change in the colonists' involvement in the war representing the British occupation of Louisbourg. The Massachusetts local militia abandoned their colony and walked 500 kilometers to invade and conquer this fortress on the island of Breton. After this victory was won with the help of the British fleet, the governor of Massachusetts prepared to attack Quebec and Montreal while rejecting all French counterattacks on Louisbourg. Even though this victory can also be seen through the prism of the Massachusetts Puritans fighting the French Jesuits, it cannot be denied that this was the first military action by an army of a colony so far from its original position. Peace in Aachen in 1748 agreed to return Louisbourg to France in exchange for territory in India, which led to great discontent in the colonies, primarily in Massachusetts. After this war, it became clear that just as Europe was about to have a great war that would resolve the differences between Prussia, Austria, and the allies of these countries, so was the war that would finally resolve who remained the sole undisputed ruler of America. Two major powers on the continent remained France and England, with their complicated alliances with native tribes. The war to end all colonial wars was in the making, and the 18th century brought the resolution of the colonial race in the northern part of the continent. In the meantime, Spain enjoyed their rule over most of South and Central America. However, Spain wasn't a superpower anymore. The French territories in America didn't have the right climate for a peaceful life during the whole year. The southern French colonies based in New Orleans were located in the tropics, while the northern colonies were very cold. The French must have looked with envy at the possibilities of British colonists in Chesapeake Bay. The goal of the French was to occupy territory that would have a mild climate during the year, and they found the ideal place in the Ohio River Valley, which has not yet been inhabited permanently by the colonists. The valley of the River Ohio was on the borders of Virginia Colony, and many people from this colony were gradually getting closer and closer to Ohio, including George Washington. George Washington was then known as a plantation owner in Virginia. The French wanted to stop this expansion by building a fort in Ohio called Fort Duquesne, which would stop any expansion attempt by colonists from Virginia or Pennsylvania, in addition to the most important areas in the Ohio River Valley. There were more disputed areas around the Great Lakes and in Nova Scotia. This time, the war for the control of America has spread to Europe, not in the reverse order as it always did after minor incidents. Virginia's Governor Dinwiddie sent a militia force under the command of 22-year-old George Washington to take over the land around Fort Duquesne. The war officially began on July the 3rd, 1754, between that squad and French troops at a place called Great Meadows near Fort Duquesne. The war had begun recklessly, and Great Britain was not yet ready for such a great conquest, especially as it had seriously engaged in political intrigue on the continent during the secret negotiations at the very dawn of the Seven Years' War. Britain had entered into an alliance with Prussia, which meant that it would be waging war against Austria and Russia, alongside the already established rivals, France and Spain. The enemy force Britain was fighting was the largest until then, and Britain wasn't ready for that. Britain suffered a serious defeat at Fort Duquesne in 1755. Admiral Byng was court-martialed and executed after mishandling the battle and losing Menorca in Spain, and Duke Newcastle resigned as Prime Minister, fearing a similar fate. At this crucial moment in 1758, concern over the foreign policy of the British Empire was taken over by William Pitt, who claimed that America should be won in Europe, which meant that more French troops would be tied to Europe by more serious support to Prussia. That way, the French could not fight in the colonies. Pitt was a man who believed that Britain's greatness and power consisted of her strength in the colonies, and viewed from the side of the American colonists, he was the ideal candidate for conducting foreign policy during this war. He ordered attacks on French colonies around the world, knowing that the French didn't have nearly enough naval capacity to defend themselves against the British in such a large area that it dulled the blade of the French attack in America. On the other hand, fearing a French invasion, the colonies held a congress in Albany to defend themselves together. The lack of unity of these colonies was clearly reflected in the fact that the congress was attended by representatives of only seven colonies. The plan was to link and coordinate the actions of the colonies. As William Pitt came to power, the balance of power in the colonies changed dramatically in favor of Britain, which led to a coordinated action by British and American colonists to conquer the famous Duquesne Fort, which in the early years of the war caused serious problems for the British. The same year, the fortress of Louisbourg was recaptured, but this time for good. In 1759, the most ambitious attempt to conquer the most defended French fortress in Quebec, led by General Wolfe, was prepared. The attack was planned in three directions. The first direction of ascent would come from Lake Ontario. The second, from the St. Lawrence River Valley, and the third from Lake Champlain. After several weeks of preparation, General Wolfe found a way to approach the cliffs and attack the fort from there. About 5,000 soldiers approached the western side of the city under cover of night and, after a 15-minute battle, took the city. General Wolfe didn't survive the battle, and neither did the French general. After the fall of the French most important city, the rest of the French colonial lands surrendered one after the other, after which Montreal accepted British troops in 1760. Spanish aid to the French was prevented by a surprise attack on Havana, and Pitt foresaw the conquest of important islands in the Caribbean. In 1763, the Paris Treaty formalized these great British victories and confirmed all conquests in North America. Britain got all of French Canada, and the French kept only the right to fish in Newfoundland. Spanish Florida also became British, while in exchange for this loss, Spain got Louisiana from France. The islands of Martinique and Guadeloupe, conquered in 1762, were returned to France because these islands produced sugar, and the colony of Virginia insisted that these islands should return to France to avoid competition. Pitt claimed they'd conquered everything and kept nothing, but this peace confirmed Britain's naval supremacy and put an end to the existence of New France. At that point, there was no way of knowing that it was the beginning of the end of Britain in North America. The last echo of the war was the uprising of Chief Pontiac, who was a French ally who continued to fight even after the surrender of the French. But the uprising was brutally crushed the same year. A letter from a native to a British merchant explaining that the French treated him with respect and that the English looked upon him with disgust shows why he is still loyal to the French king. Yet the same letter states that if the English come bearing gifts and not arms, they will be welcomed and trade will flourish. The letter ends with the sending of a gift in the form of a peace pipe. In 1766, the rebellion ended, and Pontiac surrendered. After defeating the French, the colonies considered themselves to have an unlimited capacity for expansion after the Bloody War, and the Spanish estates were not considered a threat. This great self-esteem was also reflected in its relationship with Britain. On the other hand, the United Kingdom, after great victories, had so much confidence and such a lack of finance that it began to enforce the law more rigorously in America because the colonies' rule was that they should serve the motherland, not develop on their own. In public opinion, every initial defeat in the previous war was attributed to the colonists, and every victory was attributed to the excellent leadership of the British Army. The old British pride has shown itself here in its full form. While the British slept on their laurels, colonial America developed after the Paris Treaty. The situation was developing at lightning speed, since the settlers in the colonies felt safe because France was no longer there, and there were no more fears for personal survival. On the other hand, Britain felt safe from France and could have applied stricter regulations and prohibitions in the colonies. Great Britain was in deep debt, and it decided to collect the debts of the colonies and impose much stricter control over them. The first thing that offended the Americans was the proclamation issued on October 7, 1763. After the expulsion of the French, the Americans opened up an unprecedented possibility of unlimited expansion west, as the Indian tribes were too weak to provide any long-term resistance. However, the main opposition to the expansion of American colonies has become Britain itself. A proclamation was issued banning any further settlement of territories on the western side of the Appalachian Mountains, specifically in the territory from which the French had been expelled. Britain did not want another war against the natives, similar to Pontiac's uprising. The Americans immediately opposed these measures, and by 1768, the British government, in an agreement with the natives, had moved this borderline further west, but not nearly as far as the colonists wanted. This first major rift between the Queen and the colonies was also marked by the deployment of 10,000 new British soldiers on the colonies' territory under the pretext of protecting the colonists from the natives, or a fresh attack by the French. And the colonies would pay the expenses. And then the taxes came. The first law to be established was the Sugar Act, which regulates trade between the islands and the mainland. This law was supposed to divert part of the colony's large profits to Britain and would have led to a major reduction in the smuggling and cash flow of wealthy merchants from Massachusetts. The act that started the storm was the Stamp Act of 1765. This tax was supposed to cover one-third of the cost of the army on its own. The essence of the law was that no contract could be considered valid unless it was printed on paper issued by the British government, and this was considered proof that a tax stamp had been paid. During the heated controversy surrounding the law, the famous U.S. separatist motto emerged, "No taxation without representation." Despite opposition from the colonies, this bill was passed. The notoriously rebellious Massachusetts called a Congress of all colonies to agree on further steps. While unrest erupted in Boston, Congress demanded the right to represent the colonies in the Parliament and considered all taxes imposed on the colony without consulting the representatives of the colony itself to be illegal. After new laws and taxes, the boycott continued. With the change of government, all the laws were withdrawn except for one, the tea tax. That one changed the course of history. This one law was deliberately left to show, at least nominally, that the government of the greatest empire in the world did not surrender to its own colony. Just at the time of the withdrawal of these laws, there was the first conflict between the legitimate British Army and a group of young men in Boston. Soon, the violence escalated. On December 16, 1773, a group of colonists disguised as Native Americans boarded three British ships that carried tea and dumped 342 chests of tea into the Boston Harbor. This act of protest, known as the Boston Tea Party, was the point of no return in the colonial resistance movement and led to an open rebellion against British rule. The answer from the motherland was also swift. In retaliation for the Boston Tea Party, the British Parliament passed a series of measures known as the Intolerable Acts. These acts included closing Boston Harbor until the colony paid for the damage caused during the Tea Party and two even more problematic laws. One allowed British soldiers to live in the houses of Americans at the expense of the host, and accused Americans could be taken to Britain to face trial. This led to the First Continental Congress in Philadelphia. Except for Georgia, whose delegates couldn't arrive in Pennsylvania, representatives decided to boycott British goods. British military presence increased significantly and became intolerable for the colonists. The Americans formed a colonial militia and started to prepare for conflict, and among them, leaders started to appear. The first among the equals was George Washington. Days when he lost the battle against the French forces as a 22-year-old were long gone. During the last war, he gained experience and after the war became one of the wealthiest and most influential colonists in Virginia, and was even selected as a delegate at the First Continental Congress. Soon he became the commander of the Continental Army, formed in June 1775, to fight against the British forces, among others. He remained one of the founding fathers. Benjamin Franklin also remains one of them. He was a polymath who was involved in many aspects of American life before the Revolution. He was a statesman, scientist, inventor, and writer who defended the colony's cause in London for almost 20 years before the Revolution. When he saw there was no chance for a peaceful resolution, Franklin went to Paris to try and gain financial and military support from France. The other two most important figures were Thomas Jefferson, a lawyer from Virginia, the maker of the Declaration of Independence, and John Adams, also a lawyer, but from Massachusetts. Both of them later became presidents of the United States. And while the wise heads tried to find a way to not escalate the conflict, the British Army and the colonial militia met each other not once, but in two places on April 19th, 1775, at Concord and Lexington. British troops went to disarm and arrest the rebels at Concord, but they were warned the night before, so they were prepared for the attack. They waited for the British at Lexington, but lost the battle, and the Royal Army continued advancement to Concord. there after the initial retreat. The Americans outnumbered and attacked the British army, which led to the death of more than 70 British soldiers. On the other side, the revolutionaries sustained a smaller number of casualties. That day escalated the situation, and the war began. The reality of war urged the formation of the Continental Army on June 14, 1775, during the Second Continental Congress in Philadelphia. This was the beginning of the United States Army. The Congress also sent the petition to end the war to King George III, but he refused to read it and declared the state of rebellion. At the time of the Congress, the Battle of Bunker Hill demonstrated the resilience of these rebels, who lost the battle but inflicted heavy casualties on the professional British Army. The war was in full swing. A few pivotal points changed the war and decided the revolutionaries' victory. Some of those happened on the battlefield and some at meetings. Both are equally important. The first one was the Siege of Boston. It was an event that marked the continuation of battles at Lexington and Concord. The defeated British army retreated to Boston, where they were surrounded by colonial forces. The siege lasted for 11 months, during which time the British were unable to leave the city by land or receive supplies by sea. During these 11 months, the colonists built military objects and trained troops for the upcoming war. In March 1776, the British soldiers abandoned Boston, and the colonists claimed the first significant victory because such an important city fell into their hands. After the successful start of the rebellion, the Continental Congress formed the five-man committee that wrote the most important document in the history of the U.S. The Declaration of Independence, adopted on July 4, 1776, proclaimed the American colonies' separation from British rule. The document affirmed the colonies' right to independence as sovereign states. Signed by delegates including Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and Benjamin Franklin, the Declaration became a symbol of unity among the colonies and laid the groundwork for the establishment of the United States of America. The rest of 1776 was very hard for Americans on the battlefield. British General William Howe defeated General George Washington at Long Island and conquered Fort Washington with 3,000 men. 1777 started similarly with losses at Fort Ticonderoga and the loss of the most important city, Philadelphia. These defeats threatened the revolution, but the victory at the Battle of Saratoga saved the cause. It took place in September and October of 1777 in New York. The British Army, led by General John Burgoyne, winner at Ticonderoga, attempted to invade New York from Canada. The colonists were able to defeat the British in a series of battles. The British surrendered on October 17, 1777, and the victory boosted the morale of the colonists. While the Continental Army was spending winter in harsh conditions at Valley Forge, where Washington boosted the army morale, the victory at Saratoga changed Franklin's mission in Paris, and he was able to persuade France to enter the war on the American side. The French king, Louis XVI, recognized the United States as an independent nation in 1778. Soon, he provided military, financial, and diplomatic aid to the American colonies, including military leaders such as the Marquis de Lafayette. In the next year, Spain followed with the declaration of war on Great Britain. The Netherlands also provided loans to the United States. This foreign involvement changed the war that was eventually resolved in one crucial battle. The Battle of Yorktown was the last major battle of the American Revolution. It took place in Virginia in September until the end of October of 1781. The British Army, led by General Charles Cornwallis, was surrounded by colonial and French forces. After weeks of siege, the British surrendered on October 19, 1781. The victory at Yorktown effectively ended the war and almost immediately started the negotiations that led to the Paris Treaty. Officially, the war ended on September 3, 1783, with the signing of the Treaty of Paris. The agreement was that the British needed to withdraw all their forces from the new nation, the United States of America. The new nation had boundaries from the Atlantic to the Mississippi River, and from Canada to Florida. There were no mentions of the natives, although some tribes, like the Oneida and the Tuscarora, fought along with the Americans against the British. Their sufferings continued. After the American Revolution, the United States of America was formed as a new nation. The formation of the United States was a complex process. The Articles of Confederation, adopted in 1781, proved to be inadequate for governing the country. In response, a convention was held in Philadelphia in 1787 to draft a new constitution. This process began in 1787 and was completed in 1790 when Rhode Island became the last state to ratify the Constitution. This ratification established the United States as a federal republic with a strong central government. Ideas reflected in the Declaration of Independence also entered the Constitution. This document, the United States Constitution, established a federal system of government with a separation of powers between the legislative, executive, and judicial branches. The Constitution also established a system of checks and balances to prevent any one branch from becoming too powerful. It is the system that still represents the foundation of democracy. One of the most important debates during the drafting of the Constitution was over the issue of representation. The Virginia Plan, proposed by James Madison, called for representation based on population, while the New Jersey Plan, proposed by William Patterson, called for equal representation for each state. It is easy to see why heavily populated Virginia wanted to exploit its grand population and why New Jersey wanted to prevent it. The compromise that was eventually reached, known as the Great Compromise, established a bicameral legislature with the House of Representatives based on population and the Senate with equal representation for each state. The Constitution was ratified by the required number of states in 1788 and went into effect in 1789. Since then, it has been amended 27 times, with the first 10 amendments, known as the Bill of Rights, being added in 1791 to protect individual freedoms. The early Republic period, from 1789 to 1824, was marked by political, economic, and social struggles. The new government faced the challenge of establishing a strong federal system that could unite the states. The Constitution was created to address this challenge, but it was not without controversy. The debate over the balance of power between the federal government and the states continued for decades, and it still surfaces from time to time. Additionally, the country was divided along political lines, with the Federalists and Democratic Republicans competing for power. Also, with the establishment of a stable currency, the issue of debt was vital to be resolved. The country was also faced with the challenge of building a strong economy, which was necessary for the new nation to prosper. The government implemented policies such as protective tariffs and subsidies to promote economic growth, but these measures were not without problems. Alexander Hamilton, the first Secretary of the Treasury, developed a financial plan to face these issues. His plan included measures to reduce state debts, the creation of a national bank, and the imposition of tariffs on imported goods was also part of Hamilton's plan. These policies strengthened the federal government's financial power and promoted economic growth. The country's vast natural resources, such as timber, coal, and iron, helped the development of industries such as textiles, shipbuilding, and ironworks. The boom in cotton production further boosted the economy. The First Bank of the United States was established in 1791 as part of Hamilton's financial plan. It was designed to provide a stable source of credit and currency for the young nation. After the American Revolution, there was a significant push for westward expansion, and the ones who were hurt by it were the Native Americans. The United States government implemented all sorts of policies toward Native Americans during the expansion period. The Indian Removal Act of 1830 authorized the forced relocation of Native American tribes from their lands to Indian territory decided by the USA, in today's Oklahoma. In 1832, the Black Hawk War broke out in Illinois and Wisconsin. The conflict started when Black Hawk, a Sauk leader, led a group of warriors and their families back to their ancestral lands in Illinois. which had been ceded to the United States in a previous treaty. The United States Army, led by General Henry Atkinson, was sent to remove Black Hawk and his followers. The war lasted for 3 months and resulted in the defeat of the Indian tribes. Black Hawk was captured, and the remaining Indians were forced to leave their lands and move west of the Mississippi River. The Treaty of New Echota in 1835 led to the forced removal of the Cherokee Nation from their lands in Georgia to Indian territory. This event is known as the Trail of Tears and resulted in the deaths of thousands of Cherokee people. The way the United States treated the Native Americans is probably the most shameful episode in U.S. history. The two most well-known wars or massacres of indigenous people were the Sioux and the Apache Wars. Sioux Wars were a series of conflicts between the United States and the Sioux Indian tribe in the Great Plains region. The wars began in 1854 and lasted until 1890. The most famous of these conflicts was the Battle of Little Bighorn in 1876, where a combined force of Sioux and Cheyenne warriors defeated General George Custer and his troops. It was the swan song of the natives' power. The wars ended with the massacre at Wounded Knee in 1890, where over 200 Sioux men, women, and children were killed by the United States Army. The Apache Wars were fought similarly, only in the Southwest region. The wars began in the 1850s and lasted until the 1880s. The Apache, led by Geronimo, fought a guerrilla war against the United States Army, using their knowledge of the terrain to their advantage. The wars ended with the surrender of Geronimo in 1886, which marked the end of the Indian Wars in the United States. After the surrender, Geronimo spent the remainder of his life as a prisoner of war. He died 23 years later. The Dawes Act of 1887 attempted to assimilate Native Americans into American culture by dividing their land into individual plots and granting citizenship to those who accepted the new system. However, these policies were often met with resistance and resulted in the displacement and loss of Native American culture. But the natives weren't the only enemy. The 19th century was marked by several wars that shaped the United States and its territories. These conflicts were fought for different reasons, including territorial expansion, economic interests, and even ideological differences. One of the most important wars was the Mexican-American War, which was fought between the United States and Mexico. The war was initiated by the United States, which sought to acquire Mexican territories such as California and Texas. The war ended with the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which gave the United States control of these territories. The war that changed America was the Civil War, which was fought between the Union and the Confederacy. The war was fought over several issues, including slavery, states' rights, and economic differences. The Union emerged victorious, and slavery was abolished in the United States, although that wasn't the main reason for waging war. But when the North found out that former slaves could be valuable allies, they announced the proclamation in 1863. The Spanish-American War, in 1898, it was fought between the United States and Spain over the issue of Cuban independence. The United States emerged victorious, and Cuba gained independence, under the tutorship of the USA. The war also resulted in the United States acquiring territories such as Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Philippines. Also, the United States was involved in several other conflicts, including the Philippine-American War and the Boxer Rebellion, but these wars didn't affect the American continent. Spanish colonial empire dissolved in the 19th century due to various independence movements that sometimes used the situation in Europe. There were a few main sources of tension, such as the establishment of a system of mercantilism in which South America was forced to export raw materials to Spain and then buy finished products at high prices. The ideas of the Enlightenment, the French and American revolutions, such as individual rights, popular sovereignty, and the separation of powers, inspired many South American revolutionaries to fight for their own independence. One of the first wars was the Mexican War of Independence. That was a long and bloody conflict that lasted from 1810 to 1821. Led by figures such as Miguel Hidalgo, the movement sought to end Spanish rule over Mexico and establish a new, independent nation. Miguel Hidalgo was a Catholic priest and the rector of the Colegio de San Nicolás. A man of culture, he spoke French and Italian language. Hidalgo's observations of the harsh conditions faced by the indigenous populations made him discontent with Spanish rule. Soon, he entered the conspiracy society planning the uprising in 1810. On September 16th, 1810, Hidalgo issued the famous Grito de Dolores, calling for the end of Spanish rule, the redistribution of land, and racial equality. This marked the beginning of the Mexican War of Independence. Hidalgo's forces were ultimately defeated, and he was captured and executed in 1811. Despite his defeat, Hidalgo's rebellion inspired other leaders to continue the fight for Mexican independence. The most famous battle in this war was the Battle of Calderon Bridge in 1811. Despite facing significant setbacks and defeats, the rebels ultimately emerged victorious in 1821, leading to the establishment of the first Mexican Empire. Soon, the others followed, and the most important among them was Simón Bolívar. Simón Bolívar, also known as the Liberator, was a Venezuelan military and political leader who played the role in the independence of several South American countries, including Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia. Bolívar was born into a wealthy family and received a European education. He read and was inspired by the Enlightenment ideas of liberty and equality and became a fervent advocate for Latin American independence. Bolívar led several military campaigns against the Spanish forces and played a key role in establishing Gran Colombia, a federation of several South American countries. Bolívar's vision for a united South America, known as Gran Colombia, was never fully realized, but his efforts paved the way for the eventual independence of several nations. Today, he is considered a national hero in many South American countries. He was one of the most prominent actors in almost all the major battles in these wars. Three turning points changed the war in South America. The Battle of Boyaca was decisive, fought on August 7th, 1819, in today's Colombia, between the revolutionary forces led by Simón Bolívar and the Spanish Royalist Army. The battle resulted in a resounding victory for the revolutionaries, resulting in the liberation of New Granada, which consisted of today's Colombia, Ecuador, Panama, and Venezuela, from Spanish rule. The battle was fought in the Andes Mountains,